Okay. Hi. Thanks for coming to the press availability with the House Democratic Caucus. I'm Beth Kurtula. I'm the House Democratic leader. With me today is the whip, Representative Chris Tuck from Anchorage, and one of our new members, Garen Tarr. Garen had a new bill go in yesterday on GMO and salmon, so she's going to speak a bit to that. We've had a lot of activity in the Resources Committee on the cruise ship legislation that would roll back our wastewater standards, so all of us will talk a bit about that. And I'm going to turn first to Chris for a few words, and then Garen, and then we'll open it up for questions. Chris.
Yeah, things are moving fast. Resources is really active right now. Hopefully we'll be able to get a handle on things. I think that we got to make sure that we have an opportunity to ask our questions and be able to get the answers so we can make some good, solid decisions.
Garen.
Good morning. I'll agree with my colleague there, as we're the two members on the House Resources Committee, and a lot of important bills coming before us. Of course, what's been getting a lot of attention in the last few days is the cruise ship legislation. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And I'll be talking, about my resolution. HJR 5, House Joint Resolution 5, was introduced yesterday. And this is a resolution that urges the FDA to reject the petition by Aqua Bounty and for approval of genetically modified salmon. A couple important points about this. This will be the first time that we would approve a genetically modified organism for human consumption. So a lot of concern about taking that step forward, because so far we have not done that, and there's been a lot of opposition. Over 400,000 individual comments have come in opposition to this application. And we would join the congressional delegation and the governor in opposing this. So my hope is that we take swift action. This would be an opportunity for us to speak in one unified Alaska voice in support of our wild Alaska salmon. And so hopefully you'll be hearing more about this piece of legislation as it moves through. It's been referred to the Fisheries and Resources Committee. I've been in contact with the fisheries chair, and I hope to have that up for a hearing very soon. The comment period deadline is at the end of February, so we really do need to move quickly if we want to make sure that we have that opportunity to comment.
How should people around the state contact you so that they help?
That would be great. They can contact me at my legislative office at 465-3424, or find us online. We have a Facebook page as of yesterday, and of course the legislative website is a good way to get in touch with us. You can contact myself or my staff through that. And even today, we're excited to see a story showed up in a newspaper in North Carolina about this. So there's actually a lot of interest in this topic all over the nation. So we hope to move quickly.
Okay, we're open for questions. Anybody would like to ask one? Becky.
Becky Gore, the Associated Press, for either of the resource, actually for anybody, because of the cruise ship issue. I guess, Representative Tuck, you'd mentioned that you had concerns about getting questions answered. Are you worried about the pace in House resources and your ability to get answers? I know you spoke a bit about that yesterday. I wondered more about that. And then also why this is such a problematic bill for the Democrats when DEC has said it's going to align the permits for cruise ships with what our discharges are for other ships.
You want to start?
Sure, I'll start. Yeah, I think we had an experiment to take place in committee to where we had testifiers testify, but members weren't allowed to ask questions until the very end. And unfortunately, that we didn't have a chance to ask our questions at that moment. I'm taking notes very quickly. If I need a clarification, I'd like to be able to get it right then and there and not have to think about it later on and come back to it on another day, another time. And so I was just concerned that it might be a little bit disservice to the testifiers, because then they have to hang around a lot longer than they normally would have to be able to answer questions, and at the same time make it kind of not flow as well. And so, but I think that was just a one-time deal, and I'm sure that from here on out we'll be able to move forward with our questions and answers.
Garen's got some statistics that tell you a little bit about why concern about these ships rather than so much concern about the others. So I'm going to let her speak to that, and then I'll follow up on it.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Kurtula. And just want to make sure that folks understand the magnitude of the situation. And so in a single day, an average cruise ship produces 21,000 gallons of sewage. and 170,000 gallons of wastewater. And so these are the items that we're concerned about. If you imagine that there are five ships at port sometimes, we're talking 850,000 gallons of wastewater and 100,000 gallons of sewage that they are producing each day. Certainly not all of that is being discharged, but when you think about the volume in comparison to the location where these cruise ships are anchored, then you can see it's a real disproportionate impact on the local community. And we need to really just focus on the balance between our tourism industry and making sure that we have safe, safe standards, and that we don't roll back a citizens' initiative. I think the will of the voters is often forgotten in this argument here, and so we want to make sure we honor the will of the voters that passed this initiative, protect have safe drinking water standards and safe standards for these cruise ship discharges, and just think about the volume of waste that we're talking about.
So I'm going to follow up on this real quickly and then take other questions. 14 years ago, Alaska took the lead in controlling cruise ship pollution. And actually, then Senator Frank Murkowski closed the donut holes in the Alexander Archipelago, which is where we are right now in the Inside Passage, because ships were going into these holes and dumping, and there was a concentration happening. So that closed. Then the state, through a series of bills, and finally Governor Knowles in special session, got the strictest standards in the United States, requiring certain, procedures to be used, certain things not to be dumped. And we led, in many ways, the world, except for Australia, who even then was requiring offloading in some places, like the Sydney Harbor. But we got studied and put out there, and a senator from California and I met, and he took our law and pushed it in California. So just kind of fast forward. Throughout the years, we've been watching this to protect our economy, our fisheries, and we know the effect that copper has on fish. It's very, very dangerous. The fish get into the copper and lose all sense of direction. And you can see that online. There's tests that have been done on that are really very dramatic. Also, our tourism. We know why tourists come to Alaska. It's for our pristine waters, our wildlife, our beautiful mountains. So that's important. We want to protect Alaskans' health. This can be dangerous stuff. We want to ensure our right to know what's going into our water. And that's what I want to say something about. Throughout the years, we have never gotten the complete information on that particular issue. And I think if we're going to step backwards from the citizens' initiative that required the end of pipe to be where we meet water quality standards, then we have a right to know what's in this new mixing zone and how it disperses. If it doesn't disperse, copper's not going to go away. It might break down, but it sits there. So, that's the kind of thing we need to know if this is going to happen. I want to see the models. I want to see how they came to this decision. And I want to see the report. Right now, there's a report that's been done that hasn't been peer-reviewed. And the bill would, have you run that amendment yet? Garen had an amendment that would simply allow that panel to continue so that report would be peer-reviewed. Even that isn't being done. So I'm hearing a lot from my constituents who were very involved from the very beginning on legislation to control this, and from the fishermen. So there's a lot of big questions about this. Why so fast? Why at the beginning of session before people have really recognized what's at stake? And why do we need to do it? Finally, some of the ships that are under the new initiative program are meeting the requirements 9 out of 10 times that they're tested. So if we've pushed technology to that point, why are we stepping back from it? I just have many, many questions, and I'm really concerned about this. But I can see the writing on the wall on the fast track of this legislation. But the citizens of Alaska need to be concerned and asking questions. We have a right to know when we've got a big industry coming in to our waters. These are floating cities. Everyone in Juneau knows it. This hasn't been done before. Anyway, I'm going to quit. But the final thing is that guy from California who took our law, he just recently pushed and got a 3-mile ban in California. They don't allow dumping now for 3 miles offshore. So here we are. California is going to surpass us in water quality standards. And that's a shame. That is a shame to see that happen. So thanks for letting me get up on my... I'm passionate about this issue, so thank you. Rich.
Yeah, hi, Rich Maurer, Anchorage Daily News. I guess there's a reference in a law to a science panel that was supposed to set up that... Do you have any issue with that science panel?
I do have... The question's about the science panel. I do have issues about it.
Where
and
are they?
Precisely because one of my constituents, Michelle Ridgway, who's spoken out on it, has... enumerated some of the things, information she feels wasn't given to the panel, and concerns about what's going to happen with it. But my first big concern is, what about the peer review? Anything that's used for a scientific purpose, and we should be good on science in Alaska, you know, that should be peer reviewed. But moreover, you know, what I'd like to see is a map that shows exactly where the ships are going, mm-hmm. and where they're dumping, and that should be available to every Alaskan. I mean, we should know if we're going out to go fishing, we should know if a ship is ahead of us or has just dumped. That kind of thing should be available. So the lack of information, the speed with which this is moving, and, you know, it's just, why so fast? They have another couple years. If they need a couple more years to meet these standards, let's push this out a couple more years. But let's not go backwards. So that's my point. Shauna?
Hi. Shauna Crandall, Alaska Education Update. It's been in the news a lot lately, the state administration and Begich and Murkowski. Everyone's up in arms. Oh, we have to be involved in the Kulik grounding. They have to involve the state of Alaska in the grounding of the Kulik. I have been told that if coastal zone management was still in place, this would not even be an issue. The state would automatically be involved. Can you address that?
So the question is, even if we still were in coastal zone, this wouldn't be something that the state...
If we had a coastal zone management program, the state would automatically involve.
Oh, would have automatically been involved. Well, I believe that's right. Because the way that the Coastal Zone program worked was once we were federally approved, and this is the only way we get this absolute right to have power over federal activities and federal permits. So I think that's right. I think if we had had a Coastal Zone program, this wouldn't be an issue. We would have been involved from the beginning in the permitting and in what happened. So that is a shame. Becky?
Since you brought up Coastal Zone. Are you planning legislation pertaining to a program, or have you heard anything?
I've heard about it, and I've been waiting to see, you know, what coalesces. But at a minimum, let me say this. This is something I think, whether you supported the initiative itself or not, right now there is no coordinated permitting in Alaska. So I have heard from developers all over my district here in Juneau and rural southeast that there are problems now getting permits. And, you know, if you're a huge company, you can spend thousands of dollars to go around the agencies and the federal agencies. But the nightmare is if you're, you know, want to build a dock in North Douglas or a house that's on the wetland somehow, you've got to go do it yourself. And those agencies don't always agree with each other. And what happens if you get through five and all of a sudden there's number six you had forgotten about? Those are real problems. They hurt development. They hurt our economy. We've got to have a coordinated permitting system. So that's something that I'm focused on.
So just to be clear, you've heard from other legislators that they're planning a bill? Are you yourself planning a bill?
I've heard from other legislators that they've been working on it. So that's my hope, is that we'll be able to see something this session. But maybe Garen or Chris, who work on Resources Committee, have a comment on the permitting situation.
I just want to add that, you know, the state doesn't want to relinquish that control. We want to make sure we keep that control with our local communities, you know, and breaking that department up, breaking up that permitting process, having a one-stop shop really does hurt our communities. And I feel that we no longer have the voice that we once had.
Karen, anything? Okay. Any other questions? Mark, and then to Matt.
Yeah, Mark Miller from Juneau Empire. I'm just wondering if you have any update on the Democrats' proposed oil tax reform response to Governor Parnell's legislation?
We're working very hard on it. Thank you. And we think we have some great ideas that will deal specifically with things that we will believe will bring new production, new exploration, and will concentrate on some of the big issues: heavy oil, new fields, and additional oil from old fields. So, you know, in my mind, it's better to have things fleshed out and get it as right as you can rather than just rush. But yes, we do have a response, you know, and we've got to have a response because the governor's bill is still the biggest giveaway we've seen yet. I mean, giving away all progressivity, if you didn't look at anything else, how can Alaskans stand to give away all of the upside in what's essentially a windfall profits? That doesn't make any sense for Alaskans. It's our resource, and we've got to get our fair share for it. So it was Matt next. Or do you guys want to say anything?
I just want to add that we want to make sure that we keep a vibrant industry up there, and one of the best ways we can do that is having more competition, not less competition. And we're just concerned about the capital credits, elimination of that also. We want to make sure that we continue having that competition up on the North Slope.
Karen, anything you want to say? Okay, then it was Matt.
So Matt Buxton from the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. Yesterday, Senator Ellis introduced a bill that would give the second half of funding for the UAF and UAA engineering buildings. It's about $108 million, and I think last week Teal said something around $260 million could be added to the budget without dipping into savings. Is dipping into savings, is that something you think we're ready to look or going to be looking at? I mean,
if we keep our oil tax strong and we get a realistic projection, I don't think we're going to be needing to dip into savings. If we don't, my prediction is it's going to be a very low capital budget year. But the reality is, one of the reasons why you don't want to take away all that progressivity and why you have to have new entrants and new development is that we don't want to be in that position. We're a wealthy state. We just have to manage ourselves right. Mm-hmm. So, well, Matt, follow up, and then Shauna.
Isn't the projected, you know, $260 million, isn't that on the current budget? I mean,
I still have questions about how revenue did its forecasting and whether at the end of the day we're going to actually see that low a number. Having said that, it's the out years that are probably more problematic. I'm not supporting going into savings. We're a rich state. We need to manage ourselves. We need to be sure that we're putting aside for savings. But having said that, oil is at $110 a barrel. The projections will change, so we'll see. But I like the idea that Senator Ellis has. Let me plug for that. Yeah. Okay, Shauna?
Another education question. Yesterday morning in the House Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Education, Representative Josephson seemed to be pretty strongly opposed to the one-to-one digital technology and to students using technology in classrooms. Do any of you have positions on the one-to-one initiative and students using technology in school?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I support using technology. You know, when you look at the high media intake that our children are taking these days, their mind is being stimulated tremendously with new technologies. And when you remove them from the entertainment of that and bring them into a classroom to listen to a lecturer, oftentimes their mind can't slow down enough to pay attention to what's being spoken because their mind is so used to going so fast. And I think we need to take advantage of those opportunities using multimedia to do more teaching. It's kind of like the analogy I like is this, you know, the classroom teacher is speaking at 60 miles an hour, but the mind's going 600 miles an hour. So how do you get the two together? You get the mind circling around what the instructor is instructing. And I think through the use of media and technologies, we can do that. There was just a recent article in the paper called Flip Side Education. And how we do it now is students learn the lectures, they go home and do their homework, they come back and get corrected. The flip side is they go home, listen to the lecture, watch the lecture through multimedia, come to school, and then they do their exercises together and do their homework together. And I think that might be a very high impact way of teaching our children, bringing us into the 21st century.
Well, I got to say, I don't think my mind's moving that fast these days. But. Okay, other questions? Yes, how about if we take Matt Mason at KDLG?
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yesterday
I got a chance to talk to Senator Bill Willikowski about Senate Joint Resolution 7, which basically calls on a constitution or an amendment to the Constitution to overturn the Citizens United decision. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the legislation, but on the bigger picture, what can be done or what might the caucus support to look at overturning or changing the Citizens United decision that came down in 2010?
Well, I think every American should want that particular decision overturned. And it probably takes federal action, but a resolution supporting that is a good idea. I mean, you know, the day, what was it someone said last summer to me, the day corporation can go to jail is the day they should be able to vote, or, you know, the day that they pay, you know, have to go to our schools is the day that they vote. Corporations are not human beings. They should not be able to influence the vote so heavily by the unguarded donations. It's a terrible, terrible impact on American society. So I haven't read the resolution, but I know he's headed in the right direction. Chris and then Garen?
Yeah, I just want to point, this is a country of the people, by the people, for the people, not of the corporation, by the corporation, for the corporation. And I don't like the Citizens United because I think it kind of turned things in that direction, giving them First Amendment rights. I mean, what's next? They're going to hold political office? I think it's gone a little bit too far. I think the public knows that there's something wrong with that. How we fix it. You know, we did do something when it first came out. I think it was February 2010, when that decision was made. We quickly acted here in the legislature and made sure that at least they disclose. We report the three largest contributors. You can't report all of them. That way the public has some idea of who's financing these independent expenditures.
Karen?
And a key issue for me is accessibility to government. And so I've previously been a co-sponsor of a piece of legislation for same-day voter registration. I think similarly, I'm concerned about this in terms of the accessibility issue and making sure that your government is accessible to the average person. And if the sort of the spread between the corporation and the average person is so great, then we're really removing accessibility for Alaskans.
And just to quickly follow up, have we seen the Citizens United decision dramatically impact the legislative process in Alaska?
Any time that you allow corporations to spend vast quantities of money on campaigns, you're impacting it. So the answer has to be, yeah, yes, we have. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're done. Thanks for joining us. Email us, call us, come visit us, and thank you very much for tuning in today.